This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go.
Say something.
Okay. More singing?
Mm-hmm. More singing. Say something.
Okay, that works. Thank you. We might have to leave that in. I love that. Okay, so we are back and we are continuing our coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic, including tips to help maintain your mental health during this difficult time. So first off, I wanted to start with something I've learned this week, which is from a TED Talk by a lady called Alana Shaikh, which is called Why COVID-19 is Hitting Us Now and How to Prepare for the Next Outbreak. So I think like many people, I've been majorly binging the news, but even the most trusted sources at times handle this topic in quite inconsistent ways. And so one of the interesting things I learned at the TED Talk, which I'll link in the episode description, is that COVID-19 is the name of this particular illness, whereas a coronavirus is a type of virus characterized by the symptoms mainly, so them being respiratory infections and the way in which they attack your immune system. So I found that really interesting. And so that's why you'll be hearing us refer to it specifically as COVID-19, or we'll be saying the coronavirus or this coronavirus, because coronaviruses actually include a whole range, including SARS and other illnesses that have been big in the news in past years. And I believe you watched that TED Talk as well.
I did, yeah. And it was just so interesting just to have a different take on it, really, that wasn't from the news.
No, I agree. I think the way she described it was that she's on the research as opposed to the clinical side. So her expertise is in how pandemics happen and how they spread. And yeah, that was really interesting to hear that. And in a way, I found it quite reassuring because she was able to say, look, this is typical of how something like this would spread with the kind of symptoms it has and with what we know about some people not showing symptoms and but still spreading it. So in a way, it's quite reassuring to hear that it makes sense, you know, that this isn't some kind of scientific anomaly, that actually the spread is to be expected and therefore can be understood and combated.
Well, yeah, and also how it happens from a global point of view. What really stuck out for me was environmental impact and the fact that basically more land across the globe in the last 50 years has been used to cultivate and to grow crops and then bring in animals and cattle, and there's more human contact. These viruses, these certain type of viruses, spread as this has done.
I think that was really interesting, that the spread of this is in part exacerbated because we have less of the natural barriers. Vast oceans are no longer a barrier to humans interacting with each other. And we also don't have the same level of rainforest and natural foresting around the world that at one point would have kept us separate and therefore limited the spread. It's a fascinating TED Talk and very hopeful in terms of reaffirming the science behind a lot of the small acts we can take in order to protect ourselves and others. So as I mentioned, that'll be linked in the episode description. Another thing I found interesting this week was a bit of debate around the term social distancing. So, of course, since our last episode was recorded on that very evening, it was announced that the UK would be introducing lockdown-style measures, although the government isn't using the term lockdown. And so, you know, that's a sign of how fast the response to this is developing and how seriously our government and many around the world are taking this. So I find that positive. But an interesting conversation I've seen online is around the term social distancing. A lot of people are saying that perhaps it should be called physical distancing, because that's what actually matters here, keeping a physical distance, like the 2 meter rule that we have at the moment, for example. It doesn't actually have to mean we socially distance. We can still keep in contact. We can still speak as frequently. Many workplaces are in fact increasing the amount of meetings to keep people connected whilst working from home.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting way of seeing it.
Yeah, Bobby, I think that's a really good point, and actually something that, especially from a mental health point of view, we know the impact of language and terms that get thrown around. And just hearing that social distancing does make you feel remote and alone, and, you know, because our society and our social world keeps us going so often. And you're absolutely right. I'm not actually socially distancing. I mean, I've had that many Zoom calls and that many Skypes and telephone calls. I've never had that much in my life. Seen everyone in my whole family about 58 times in a week. So I'm not actually socially distanced from anybody. Obviously, I am physically distant from people. And I just think you're right. It puts a different spin on it. And I think it's a better spin. Maybe we should campaign that.
A new petition. I mean, yeah. Everyone's at home. They've got time to sign a petition. But no, I did find it really interesting. But no, you're right. It may sound on the surface of it a little bit pedantic, but actually there is a lot of confusion that people are facing in terms of these measures. Mm-hmm. And so language is more important than ever, I would argue. One thing I found really useful for understanding these measures and them being really clearly explained is the BBC have done a mini series that you can get through iPlayer, in which they break down not just the measures that we're being encouraged to take by the government, but also how practical those are and how to achieve them. So they did one on how to stop touching your face as much. They've done one on how to work out what 2 meters looks like. One of the examples they gave was that if you imagine you have a broom, if you can't reach somebody with that broom, then you know they're at least 2 meters away.
Ah.
To me, that's quite a funny visual in my head, to imagine me thrashing around with a broom trying to see if I can reach people.
Well, the hilarious thing is I saw on Instagram a guy on a park has got like, imagine a hula hoop, a giant one, 2 meters, obviously it must have been in radius, a hula hoop with like straps over his shoulder, literally, and it wasn't made up because somebody else was filming it and they were laughing, walking through Clapham Common with this big, massive hula hoop around him, just got social distance, keep your distance on his back. And I just thought that was so funny and so cool, because actually you can't get close to him if you tried. You could only, you know, so if he's in a supermarket with that on, you know, because that's the thing, isn't it? You can't, you know, people, you do walk past somebody, you know, when I'm wandering on the street or going for like runs, which I've been trying to do every day, like I cross over. It's really weird. It's a bit, you feel a bit rude, but you cross over or you run in the road or you do something to get away. But actually, when you're in a supermarket or in a shop, you have to go in for essential purposes. If somebody walks past you, we're not that far apart, are we? Let's face it.
No, it's not at all natural to keep that distance from someone. And it does feel rude. It feels weird to do it. Because I've had it in the supermarket where I've like gone to go down an aisle and then there's someone there. But then I also realise I don't need to go down that aisle because it's not got what I thought it did. And so then I immediately like spin around and walk back, whereas normally you would just walk down it anyway and then turn at the end and go down the next one. You just keep your stride, whereas I'm, yeah, literally backing away from people.
But no, but that sounds good, though, what you're saying, because it does really clear the measures up. What did it say about the touching your face then?
That one I haven't actually watched yet, but it is on my to-do list because I'm, yeah. I guess unless you just focus on trying to keep your hands busy, particularly if it's something you do as a, like, anxious release. A lot of people will have particular tics that just make them feel less nervous or give them something physical to channel their nervousness into. So maybe it's worth having a stress toy or take up crochet or knitting or have a silly like game you don't really need to pay attention to on your phone. There's probably things you can do to divert that energy if you're used to being a bit of a fidgeter.
But I guess all this, again, only really applies when you're out. Because if you're, you know, I'm working from home, I'm going to the supermarket and I wear gloves and I wash my hands thoroughly when I got home. But while I'm in, like, you know, I'm touching my face all day.
I guess that's true, unless you're self-isolating because one of your family members has the virus or has symptoms.
Yeah.
But no, it's good to know that those resources are out there. And I've been really impressed with how quickly a lot of resources have come out. So I'm considering doing a bit of a like an online pack of resources just to link all these together. I thought that might be useful. For now, we'll just quickly mention the current state of affairs in the UK and what we're expecting. As I mentioned, there was a big announcement last Monday, and we're recording these special episodes on Mondays. So quite a few things that I'd predicted ended up coming true. So I thought, why not make that into a theme and see what else I can predict? No? You're allowed
I didn't want to interrupt. I thought you were going
to
carry on.
You're allowed to respond to that. Yeah, so no, I was just thinking, given that I'm spending all this time consuming news and really reading a lot of articles, and that's helping me feel more in control and I guess more empowered at the moment, I thought it would be good to try and channel that into something useful. So a few things that I'm expecting on the horizon and I'm kind of already mentally prepping for is the current lockdown type status we have to continue for the foreseeable future. So on the latest government briefing, Dr. Jenny Harries, who's the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, she mentioned that in reference to a question from a journalist about when these measures might be lifted. And she said, well, we'll be reviewing it, particularly in the next 3 weeks, as that's when we will have a good idea of if the measures in place at the moment are making enough of a difference. So basically, because of the delay of people's symptoms manifesting and these kind of social changes really taking hold, they're saying that it'll take at least 3 weeks for them to figure out how much these changes are having an impact on the spread. Yeah. And so from there, they'll review it. But she said, ultimately, it's likely to be 6 months of some kind of measures. So they'll lift them as much as they can, but they also can't lift them immediately and suddenly, because then there'll likely just be another peak and the stats that may be going down will just go straight back up again. So as you'd imagine, all the newspapers are really running with that. So a lot of them are reporting that she has announced there will be 6 months of lockdown, which is not what she said. No. And it wasn't exactly an announcement. It was an answer to a question. However, I think it is good to mention as something to kind of mentally prep for. And certainly with me, when I'm planning ahead in terms of the podcast, when I'm planning in terms of life changes I need to make through this, I found that quite good to sort of have in mind.
Sorry, Bob, I think that's great. And I think on that point, though, before you carry on, I just want to, you know, mention how important it is that even the fact that papers are running, that it's an announcement, this is happening a lot. And we've got to make sure that any source of information that we read, that we really do know where it's coming from. And as you said, you like to read a lot of news. I'm the opposite. I read the headlines every couple of days. I know what's going on. But in this situation, that's not my preferred way of kind of staying either in control, or just for you it is. And for everybody else, it will be different. But I think it's a really key point, because my other half said to me earlier on, oh, I hear that they've announced 6 months. And I was busy and I was preparing for our recording and I haven't read the news today. But that was in the back of my mind. And as you've just said then, that's what they're saying, but that's not what the person that said it is actually saying. And so I just wanted to make that point. I just think that's critical, that we don't run with these types of headlines until, you know, without really looking into it and understanding what's been said.
No, that's a really good point. And it's very true that we need to try and have a good idea of these stories and what the source is. I mean, I even saw one paper today, I believe it was the Daily Mail, but don't hold me to it, where their front page referenced her as the chief medical officer. And she's actually the deputy chief. So, you know, when they're making such a basic mistake as that, and ultimately it then means they're crediting somebody else with what she said, that's quite concerning. So I think it is important to try and read beyond the headlines if you're going to, or like you mentioned, have somebody in your household or in your life that you speak to regularly that is keeping tabs on the news and is up for translating these things.
Yeah.
As they go. What she was actually saying was far nearer to, this is the kind of precautions we would take, as opposed to, we're determined to keep this lockdown on for longer. I am expecting it to last, at least most of these measures to last for longer than the 3 weeks until the first review, I guess is my prediction. My other prediction is, there are a lot of places elsewhere in the world that have stripped back who is allowed to go to work further than we have. And I think that's probably going to come with us as well. that may be something you're getting a feeling of, listeners, by all the emails you're getting from companies really pushing like sales and promotions at this time. And I think a lot of that is because there's concern in the retail industry that the online sales that they're doing currently may be stopped as well. So there may come a point where the government says, okay, these people going to warehouses every day are not considered essential workers, and therefore this type of work also needs to stop. So some places in the US, that's already happened, Italy being another example. So that's, again, another thing that I'm sort of mentally preparing for. There are a few things that if I know I can get them online, but I can't get them in the supermarket, then now's the time to purchase anything that may be a part of your usual routine. You know, if there's a particular skincare that you find works for you, if there's a particular hair product. Listeners, if you've been around for a long time, you'll know I order Function of Beauty hair products. They're only available online.
Sorry to interrupt you, Bobby, but on a practical note, I need a new toaster because I've got a family of four. We've got a four-slice toaster and two of them are broken. So now when we're having breakfast or we're doing lunch and we all need some or whatever we're doing, we're waiting for four people. Everything else is going cold for the fourth person who, guess who that normally is? Me, that I've now got like soggy beans because everybody else is getting theirs. I'm like a school canteen doing it in rounds. And I said, that is it. I am on the lookout. So I'm going to take your advice and get online and get me ordered a nice four-slice new toaster. I'm not getting makeup and hair products, but someone out there might be listening and thinking, yeah, Danielle, you're a woman of my own heart. I need some kitchen utensils and I'm going to go and get them.
I think that sounds very fair.
What? Not as glamorous?
No, I think that's, as you said, very practical and a good idea. To my defense, we did just order some bulbs because one blew here. So I'm taking the opportunity to buy a few so I have them put away. And I thought to myself, is this the best use of my time or money right now, buying bulbs I'm going to have to go and pick up from Sainsbury's? And then I thought, yes, because I'm spending all this time at home. So now is the most relevant time ever for me to have a properly lit home. I certainly feel more uplifted in a brightly lit home. I blame it on like years of retail work, to be honest. You know, you work enough years in Selfridges and you're used to a certain like level of excessive lighting. So there's my latest thoughts and predictions and things I'm preparing for. And then we'll just check in with our stats again from last week. So first off, the number of people that have recovered globally as of today, Monday, 156,402 at least. And the reason I say at least is because there are so many people that have symptoms but haven't been tested and have recovered. So that is only likely a fraction of how many people have recovered. But it's nice to see how much that is going up. Over 50,000 more reported as recovered since we read that out last week.
Brilliant.
That is very good to hear. And as the science develops, there's a better understanding of to what degree these people are going to be immune from this as well. So those people will no doubt be helpful in reducing the amount of spread going forward as well. And then the other stat, in terms of confirmed cases of COVID-19, only 5% of those are considered to be serious or critical globally.
Oh, that's a great stat.
So that has neither gone up nor down since last time. And as I mentioned last time, will likely be even lower. Doesn't include everyone, particularly those who have the mildest symptoms. So two more positive stats than you might be hearing on the news. And then the last thing we are sharing is our weekly potential positive to come out of all of this. And this week we're looking at the social effects and particularly how united people seem. That certainly for me, it seems that there hasn't been something for the UK to unite behind to this extent since really the Olympics. That was the last time, certainly now I know, that we were all tuning into our TVs, listening to the news, and all really following something seemingly as a nation. And whilst this is a far grimmer reason for us to be also tuned into current affairs, it's been really positive to see how people have really got behind the government advice, are really committing to keeping themselves and others safe. And one particular sign of that united effort that I loved was the Clap for Carers campaign, which, Danielle, remind me, what day was that?
It was on Thursday, and I was going to ask you if you live in an apartment building. So what happened at your end?
So not as much here because, you know, there wasn't anyone outside. So maybe not quite as impressive scenes as a lot of people will have had or will have seen on the news. But yeah, there was a lot of whooping, I think, particularly because, you know, it's a big space. I overlook a few other apartment buildings here. And so maybe people knew that their claps weren't necessarily going to reach as far.
Oh, I love, number one, how you said whooping. That cracked me up. ours was amazing, and I wanted to send it to you, actually, and I can't believe I forgot. We all stood outside on my street, and it was so loud, and there were people up the street with, like, pans, I think, beating their pans, mm-hmm. and it was I felt privileged that I could stand there with my children and for them to understand what we were doing, and we've got family members who are out there as doctors and nurses and currently at work in hospitals and in the community, so who are really close family members. So, you know, it was easy to relate that to the kids and for them to understand, you know, why, you know, Auntie Izzy is at work and we're clapping for all the work that she does and other people. So that was a real privilege, but it was the most emotional thing. The whole street came out and everybody in the houses came out and stood on their drives, and there were fireworks, and it was really, really loud and really, really good. So, yeah, I was so impressed with everybody. And it felt really, as you said, really connected as a community that we all did that. And it's every Thursday, isn't it, 8 o'clock, coming together as a community and seeing faces, spreading some joy and smiling and clapping and singing. It's amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And I've just looked it up. You're quite right. There is plans for that to be every Thursday at 8 p.m. So that's exciting.
Mm.
I didn't know this. A Dutch yoga teacher first started the campaign in the UK.
Ah.
So yeah, there you go. But no, it was incredibly moving. And I spoke to my mum this evening, and both my parents are medical. She said it moved her to tears, honestly, watching it. Oh. She stood out in front of her door and the whole street was out. They don't live in the city centre like I do. So, you know, it was a real additional community spirit because she knows a lot of her neighbours in a way I don't as much. Yeah. And she said, really, it's a type of work that you don't get thanks for enough, that you're not actually there for thanks. You're there to help the patients and save lives. But it's incredibly moving when you do see that immense show of public support and a reminder of how much people do value your work, because at times it can be strangely isolating that you're only around people that are either other medical professionals or people that are ill. You don't often come in contact with that big public praise. And I'd never really thought of that before.
I know, that's really true. It's a really good point. And also, all sorts of people that work in hospitals that are still going out there to go to work to help keep everybody going, there's a real moral implication for them. And a friend of mine was talking about the impact even on that, on her mental health, because she said, I'm out there risking my life because I don't have any protection. I'm dealing with patients all day and I've got two children at home. So I am putting them at risk and myself at risk and my family. She said, but there's a strange thing that she said, I could, you know, easily say, oh, I've got symptoms and stay at home. She said, but when all your colleagues and your friends and everybody that you work with day in and day out is all doing the same thing, there's just this sense of pulling together. And actually find yourself, that becomes more powerful. Obviously, you want to help the patients, but you also, she said, I couldn't sit at home knowing that my colleagues are out there on the front line and I'm not doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I just couldn't do that. And I thought, again, what a lovely sense of commitment, belonging, you know, how tribes really do work. You just want to work, you know, in teams. You do it for the team, don't you? You just seem to do it in these times and more than ever, just to pull together.
I think that's a really good point, and certainly that's echoed in my own family and other medical people I know that have mentioned, you know, I'll probably need to go on the front line. Many of whom have not worked in a hospital setting or not worked in intensive care or A&E settings for decades, and yet just know it's the thing that needs to happen and don't mm-hmm. complain about it. It's very kind of matter of fact that I'll likely be needed to do this.
Yeah.
It is really inspiring, and it's great to see that out of a time of great potential social isolation, that our countries seem more united than they have in years, certainly more united than they have been the last few years politically. And one thing I wanted to share in line with that was a specific example. So this is a story of a nurse called Lucy Duncan who shared an experience she had recently. And I'll just read a slightly abridged version of that. "What an eye-opener tonight has been. After working a 12-hour shift, I was driving home from work when someone drove in the side of me. They then drove off. I followed the car to a street where the car had parked up. I got out of my car to see an elderly man was driving. The man opened his car door and reached out to me. He grabbed my arm tightly and told me he had COVID-19. The man asked for my help with beads of sweat rolling down his face. He was drifting in and out of consciousness as he spoke. I went to my car and luckily had a mask but no further protective equipment. I rang an ambulance for the man and he told me he hasn't eaten for 7 to 10 days as he has been in isolation and has no family or friends. The man had attempted to drive to get some food and essentials and said that he didn't trust other people to do this, as there's a lot of horrible people in the world. I followed the ambulance in my own car and stayed with him for 5 hours wearing full PPE. The man was so grateful that I stayed with him and kept squeezing my hand and pulling it close to him. The man asked me why I was being so kind, so I told him I would hate to be poorly and have no one by my side. He has my contact details if he wants to tell me when he is better. I know I have saved a man's life tonight. If I waited to ring an ambulance in the morning, he wouldn't be alive tomorrow." So I found that incredibly moving to read, and the fact that she'd posted it just after it had happened. You know, she'd been on a 12-hour shift. She'd then been looking after this man for 5 hours, then got home and then shared this story. So it's just incredible to me as an example of another nurse going above and beyond at the most challenging time.
Wow. What a special lady.
I know.
And she's one of millions, isn't she? And actually, on that note, the NHS have been recruiting volunteers, of which I've applied to be one, to be a check-in and chat person. So people can ring you, or you can ring people who are known to be isolated in the community and just give them 10 or 15 minutes of your time. Or you can log on to a system and receive calls. And I kind of wanted to just say at this point, it's potentially going to be a great service. There's the check-in and chat. There's also to be a responder to drop off maybe food shopping and non-essential medical things, but also to help with transporting equipment and things. So it's a really, really good service that they are trying to deliver. However, they've had to pause on the recruiting to process the 750,000 applications.
Wow.
Brilliant. It's just a shame that they can't now. They haven't got the functions to be able to process all the applications, but...
I'm so glad that you mentioned that one. That's another wonderful example of how people are coming together, particularly when you bear in mind that the NHS had asked for 250,000 volunteers.
Mm.
And now they've got more than three times that and have had to pause applications. So, no, that's exciting. And I think you'd be so brilliant at that.
Oh, I just love it. And some of these people would just be, you know, there's an elderly lady that lives on my street that, you know, I've gone past with the girls and we've been walking and we're waving her at the window. And I'd bought myself a little bunch of daffodils last week when I went shopping, and a son who lives quite far away was at the window and trying to talk to her through the window. I could see a nurse inside the living room with her as a carer. And I just, you know, waved my flowers and I offered them, and she looked at them. And so I just left them on the drive. You could collect them for her. And those things just bring a smile to people's faces, don't they? You know, they're only a pound bunch of daffodils. I mean, for one, there's not many elderly people out there that don't love a daffodil in the spring. You know, thinking about my grandparents, my nan always used to say, oh, I love the daffs coming out in the sign of the spring. And I think I'm getting toward that age, because it really excites me. But it just seems to be my older friends and older members of the family seem to really appreciate. Maybe we just appreciate these, you know, life little gifts that we get that bloom up everywhere. But yeah, she loved it. And I just thought it inspired me and made me think, what can I do?
For sure. I look forward to checking in with you on how that all goes.
I know. I feel like I'm waiting to be selected now.
No, it is interesting how quickly we all just fall into these new routines. It's certainly feeling that way for me. I now have this whole new physical distance life. So, yeah, it's curious.
You had any social gatherings online?
Not really. I've been more checking with people one-to-one, but then that's more my kind of style anyway.
I'd say that's more kind of your style, not like me and my girlfriends last Saturday night. And we all put headbands on for some reason in solidarity. One cake, I think we all made a bit of an effort. We had like a 9:30 drinks in out thing going on. It's a friend's birthday. And I even put lipstick on perfume. I actually can't believe it. Like Anthony said to me when I walked downstairs, like, what have you got lipstick on for? And the kids. I was like, well, because I want to. I can. I think it was Kat that inspired me last Monday. She had bright red lips on in the day. And I was like, you know what? You can do it in the day, Kat, to go to the big Tesco. I can do it for drinks with my friends. And there were six of us on a Zoom call from 9 p.m. or 9:30 till 1 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And we were just having drinks and we were chatting, having loads of fun conversations, but also talking about what's going on and some of the serious things and just how we would if we got together for dinner or in a bar. And I really would advocate people to do that because it was, if that's your thing, but it was just really nice. There was no beginning or end. We were all kind of chilling. Someone would get up, make a bit of food. Somebody had nipped to the loo. Like, it wasn't like you had to be just there. They were just in the room with me while I was pottering about and doing stuff and then put a bit of music on. We all had a bit of a dance. When a bit of a tune came on, we were like, whoop, turn this up, love this tune. So, yeah, it was really good. So I would definitely say if anybody is into that kind of stuff or is missing those social get-togethers or bars or restaurants or things that you'd normally do, definitely tap into either Zoom or House Party. They're really good ways of communicating with groups if that's your thing.
Yeah, that's so great and so important. And that's been really incredible to see that a lot of people are actually being more sociable than normal, that it's somehow you give people a challenge or a restriction and they'll find a way to excel.
Yeah,
it's great stuff. So we'll talk more in depth about how we're getting on, how we're coping with all these changes, supporting our mental health, and loads of tips we want to share. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. And we're back. So first off, Danielle, do you want to share how the lockdown measures are going for you?
Really well, in terms of what my initial fears were, which were having the children at home all the time. But I'm under no illusion that we are 1 week in.
Mm-hmm.
And every few months, children have a half term and we all just manage it. If you're a home working mom or normally mine were booked into a holiday scheme thing. But I think a week is doable. I reckon most people after a week are okay-ish, starting to wonder about if this is now, what is it going to be like? Because, you know, toward the end of last week and the beginning of this week has gotten a little bit chaotic. Some of the schooling has gone a bit out the window. I'm not overly pressured with it. Like, a lot of people have been a bit like, oh, just relax, don't get overly pressured about it. But I reckon in a few weeks, if this is 3 or 4 weeks, then that would just be a nightmare. Because again, try and put it to school holidays, but you do stuff in holidays.
Mm-hmm.
You go out, you know. I'm privileged really that we're here and we're healthy and my children are great and I can teach them and they can learn. Like, I know I might sound a bit cliche, but I really feel privileged for that. Me and my other half, on the other hand, it's actually not been too bad, but I think we're going to have to come up with some, like, when you get your own time, and that means either come upstairs and have 2 hours of work or, you know, a bit of scheduling we might have to do, because otherwise it is quite difficult, let's say the least, especially when children are involved.
Right.
Yeah, because he wants to work. We've all got interest. Him and I both do things online. So then somebody's sat with the phone and you're like, can you get off your phone, please? The kids are like talking to us. Probably didn't think the same with me when it's me. So, but overall, Bob, first week down, not too bad. Keep asking me the question every Monday and I'll let you know how it's going.
I think you're doing good, but it is a massive change. And for context for the listeners, you normally don't spend weekdays together.
Interesting. And obviously we're going to talk about that, aren't we, now, in terms of the impact on relationships, because you're right. Anthony works majority of his week in London. So, and we're here in Birmingham. That has worked well for us for so many years. And although people are always like, oh my God, don't you find that weird? I'm like, hell no. Like, it's amazing. Like, the fact that we are with each other 4 nights a week and not with each other 3. We get to do our own thing, basically, which means for me, slob about in my trackies, watch like a load of my own stuff on TV, And like now, every night, you're kind of having to compromise, even just on those things. Do you know what I mean? Like compromise on like what we're watching. I want to watch my own thing. Like,
I've definitely found that a lot here as well. So Kat and I sometimes will watch programs together, but a lot of the time we won't. We're just, oh, if you're hearing a bit of clattering in the background, that's Milan, my cat. She has chosen right now, just when we get back to recording, to go to her food bowl and crunch some crunchies. Mm. So, sorry, I was saying that we don't have a routine of sitting down in front of a TV. Instead, you actively choose what you're going to watch. And often that means we're both following different series, or sometimes we find a series that both of us want to watch, but one of us wants to binge it and one of us wants to watch an episode a day. Yeah. Like, so it can be tricky, but I think it's like that with everything. Every part of your domestic arrangement is under a microscope right now.
Especially when, it's not the norm to be with somebody every day. I think as well, because Anthony and I only spend a short time together, we want to be together. So we are together on those nights that he's here, and we will watch TV together when we do spend time together. Actually, if we stop doing that, even in the week now that he's been here all week, we've been together all week, it would feel a bit weird to now start saying, I'm just going to go upstairs and have an evening away, because we're not used to that. If we live together full time, I reckon it wouldn't even be a thing as much, because we definitely, and we go out with our own friends and do all our own stuff. Like, we're definitely not one of those couples that, like, every night we have dinner, watch telly, and we're stuck like glue. We're not. So I'm waiting for one of us is going to say, like, over the next couple of days, I'm just going to go upstairs, like, tonight, like, see ya. Weird that was for us, but like you said, people who live together will be going through like all this adapting, won't they? It's crazy, really.
It's a challenge, and I think even beyond the sort of changes to routine, there's a kind of psychological element to it as well. You are more trapped right now with people. You can't just go sit and work from a coffee shop for an hour if you want to like clear your head and not be around any humans that you know. I think a lot of that has a big impact socially, but also mental health wise, trying to feel comfortable and trying to feel like you've got everything you need at home in lieu of actually being able to leave.
Talking about that, I think that's another key factor in terms of co-parenting, Robbie, and people that have joint custody in this situation. It's a massive challenge, absolutely massive. Been a lot more clear with the guidelines. You are, if you're under 18, you are actually allowed, you are permitted to travel between parents. Mm-hmm. There was a lady on the news who said when it was announced that we were all on lockdown and you could only go out for these certain reasons, my son was with his dad for the 4 days that he has him. And she said, I suddenly thought, I'm not going to see my child for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks or God knows where. You know, there's a lot of families out there at the moment being challenged and having to adapt to this, and obviously not forgetting the children in the middle of it all.
No, I think that's so true. And one of the surrealist parts of all of this has been watching one of the daily briefings, and the deputy chief medical officer, who I mentioned earlier, was asked a question about people that are in relationships, not relating to kids, just people that are in relationships and don't live together.
Yeah.
How do they navigate this? Does that mean they can't see their partner for the duration of this? And, you know, she was aware of how strange it was that here she is essentially being asked to give relationship advice to the nation live on TV, something she would have never imagined doing only a few weeks earlier. And she even said that I'm wary of giving relationship advice, but what I'd say in terms of our guidelines is, you know, maybe now is the time to consider what is best for the practicalities of your relationships. You know, would it be a time when you could see yourself moving in together at one house or other? It could be actually a real test of people's relationships right now. Or is it that you're better staying separate, but keeping in contact, maybe staying in contact more so that you don't feel as cut off from each other? Yeah, it was quite a surreal thing to watch that.
I bet it was. We had this awkward conversation somewhere in our family the other week because somebody raised the fact that, like, how is this one family member like coping without their girlfriend? And like the whole family and this person's parents were there as well on the Zoom chat. And it was just really awkward because I think this one family member had like wanted the girlfriend to be like quarantining with the family. And like the parents of the family were like, hell no, we are not having like your girlfriend living with us for who knows how long. And it just made me think, I reckon that's going on in so many families around the place. You know, there's so many people who have got girlfriends and boyfriends who stay over quite a lot. But then there's this been whole thing about people who come back from uni and they want their boyfriend or girlfriend to come back with them. And parents are just not having it. And I've had this conversation with quite a few people, like younger relationships, that when, you know, when you're like 18, your whole life is around your boyfriend or girlfriend and you just want to be with them all the time. I suppose not just 18, but that was my experience anyway. Being younger, it was more important. Like my boyfriend was like my world. And like, you just can't see them now. And like, you're all of a sudden back living at home, like a child, when you're so used to being out and stopping at theirs and they stop at yours. So we had quite an awkward, it's funny. I mean, I find it hilarious. I don't think the person who was part of it did. Stop being pissed at your family because they won't let her come and quarantine with you. Do you know what I mean?
But that's it. The social factors are massive. And the thing that I find crazy to think about is that there could be people that live only around the corner from each other. And yet if they're properly following the social guidance, or if, you know, one family is having to quarantine, for example, then they won't even see each other. So you'll be in a long distance relationship, essentially, with someone that lives around the corner.
Yeah.
And as someone that has had but never survived long distance relationships, or more so the relationships haven't, it's a big change for people. And the uncertainty of not knowing how long that will go on for is a lot to deal with.
I know, maybe I'm a bit insensitive to it because obviously my relationship is long distance during the week and we've been together for so many years and we've always been so independent of each other. Although together, I'm never the best person. I try and be really judgmental, but you know, those relationships that are like joined at the hip and never apart, I don't necessarily think of that healthy at times.
But I think that is really fair, what you've said. You know, we all have our own perspective on this and we all have our own strengths that we're bringing to this pandemic. And I think that's really helpful to acknowledge and something that I'm really glad we cover in an upcoming bonus episode where we talk to a counsellor and she shares a lot about how, in many ways, a lot of the people she counsels are better prepared for a situation like this and the big life changes because she's constantly building those kind of resilience skills with them in practice. And so in many ways, you know, that is one of the upsides to me, that any sort of flexibility you already have in your relationships, any ways in which you're used to maybe seeing somebody in person, but also keeping in touch in phone and other methods, these are all suddenly really great strengths that will stop you feeling quite as removed from people. Yeah, that's definitely an upside that I could extend to our listeners as well, that, you know, many people, by being proactive and listening to a show such as this, will have built up ideas of coping mechanisms, will have hopefully, if nothing else, felt somewhat empowered by the things we share, that, you know, the feelings of anxiety, the feelings of stress, the depression, whatever symptoms or conditions you're dealing with, that's valid, that's understandable now more than ever. You know, if you can't be stressed during a pandemic, when are you allowed to be stressed?
I absolutely agree with that, Robin. I think it's quite an interesting take on it, isn't it? That those of us who already have therapists or have a toolkit of coping strategies actually might be the ones that get through this a bit easier, maybe the ones we need to look out for, or those people who are out there busy all day, never alone, don't spend much time self-reflecting. Maybe they're the ones that may struggle actually more so in this situation. And maybe some of our listeners who do feel that they struggle from time to time with their mental health, or those who live with severe mental illness every day, maybe we're the empowered ones. Maybe we're the ones that will get through this with a little more strength and, you know, ability to cope. So maybe the tables will turn.
I think it's an important point. And even a random example from my own life, you know, I was joking around with a friend of mine and she has anxiety and she was saying, actually, one strange thing out of all of this is suddenly her anxiety makes sense to everyone. That, you know, she feels like she's in survival mode and she's anxious day to day. And suddenly, you know, she only needs to talk about COVID-19 and everyone understands her anxiety all of a sudden.
Wow.
And so in many ways, she's, you know, as much as she's feeling the anxiety, she's actually feeling better supported than usual and better understood.
Wow.
So, yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Absolutely. And going to the gym's a big one for us and for both of us. I have been running, as I've mentioned, but both of us go to the gym, and it is obviously for fitness, but also absolutely for our mental health. Anthony'd be out in the gym every single day, and he's not some like big body buster. Like, you know, I know I'm a bit biased, you know, he's got a great body, but he's not like, you know, I'm like out there wanting to be gymming for like how I look. He's not that kind of gym guy. He enjoys the health aspect of it, but I know it just frees his mind. He might put his music on or listen to a podcast and ours generally, and just enjoys that freedom, you know, and that space, and that impact on his mental health, my mental health, not having that, like you said, coffee shop. I work in coffee shops all the time, and that is definitely the thing that could start being a little bit of a struggle with, I think, my mental health especially.
No, I definitely get that. I mean, even Milan is staring adoringly at me right now because she's just used to us being around so much. And even with her, there's times when we want to get away from her because we're just not used to her. We're not used to her constantly, but she does like attention a lot, or she wants to kind of smile at you or rub past you. And then you have to like, does she want something? Is her food full? There's a lot of sort of low key checking on her that you don't realize until you're in the same room all day long.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. Pets. I've not thought about relationships with pets. I reckon there's a lot of euphoria, people who have pets, when you actually come in and your pet greets you. Like that feeling that people get from that. They love that, don't they? Especially with dogs. I mean, and cats, I guess, but cats mooch around a little bit more. They're not as like hyper as dogs. But like, you know, people love that when they get in and their dog comes to them. I've even noticed it because my mum's dog's now elderly and he's blind. I'm blessed. I said to somebody the other day, normally when you go to mum's, that's always there at the door before you've even got your key in. He's heard that there's someone coming. Now you walk into mum's and you don't hear that because he's upstairs and it takes him like 10 minutes to get up on his feet and walk down the stairs. And I've really noticed that, and not actually getting that real sense of enjoyment and love and greeting from a pet. So people that live with them full time, you're right, like you love your pet, but they're just there with you now all the time. There's no like break from them. That weird a bit.
It is a little bit, because I've never spent this much time with her solidly. But I think we're closer. You know, she's certainly not mad at us for going to work, because we're not going anywhere hardly. It's a great time to have a pet. Maybe not get a new pet, not necessarily suggesting that. To spend time with an existing pet is actually really nice, because she's the one neutral being in our household in all of this. So, you know, day to day, putting our head around it, figuring out what kind of life changes we need to make, figuring out how to keep occupied. A lot of my self-worth, as I've mentioned with the podcast before, is quite closely tied to my work. Not to a point where it's a detriment to me, I think, as much anymore. Like, I definitely think my self-worth was too tied to work in the past. However, I'm still trying to find that balance of not panicking that I'm not working, instead finding a new pace that I'm going to do a bit less. I'm going to focus more on the podcast, the things that I do have control over and are still operating as normal. And then just trying to make peace with doing less of other kinds of work. Whereas Milan is just going around her usual day. She probably knows that we're stressed. She's certainly checking on us more. But she's not watching the news. So I'm finding it really nice to be around a nice neutral animal.
Yeah, you're right.
Soak up some of our stress.
Oh.
I mean, there's a saying that's why God made them fluffy, to soak up human emotions.
Oh, is there? Mm. Is that actually real, Bobby? Or did you make that up?
That saying. I don't know where it's from, so.
From where? Oh, that's cute though, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, we got a bit lost talking about how wonderful Milan is. It's partly that she's just like sat next to some flowers we got free from Tesco and just gazing into my eyes. I guess that leads us on to the next thing we should talk about. Last week we talked all about going to the big Tesco. We went again today. I again loved it, and it may...
loved it.
It probably is the fact that I'm not getting out much anymore, so Tesco is now my social life. But no, I enjoyed it. It was nice and quiet. There wasn't a queue outside. All Tesco's now are limiting the number of people in at any one time, but because of the size of this one, they didn't need to today. And that is definitely a tip I'd give people. Try and shop at the off-peak hours. So Monday mornings seem to be working for us. And also it seems to be when they've had a lot of deliveries. So there was toilet roll today. There was pasta. There was bread. There was everything you'd ever need.
Oh, wow.
When we went in, we had baskets wiped down and handed to us, sterilised.
Oh, my God.
I felt very fancy.
I bet you did. And to be honest, though, I am really impressed with Tesco because they're the only ones I've actually seen televised adverts about their stores and you know, getting to the point where every cashier's got plastic in front of them. There's markings on the floor. You know, actually, to be able to turn around an organisation that big, get these adverts out and adapt the stores. And like you said, there's people wiping down trolleys and giving them to you. Like that reaction and response is really, really amazing, to be fair.
Yeah, I've been really impressed, actually. And it sort of creates a community atmosphere as well. There's even signs when you come through the tills that say, we'll get through this together.
Wow.
You know, and it's just sweet gestures like that. And the security at the door that are there actually to check how many people are in the building and keep a count on that. But, you know, they're welcoming everyone and saying, you know, how are you and stuff. So it's nice to still have those interactions, even though people are keeping their distance more. It just shows you what matters, though. When you strip back our lives, there's so much that I think is already falling away. You know, all these things we're realizing aren't necessities. It's also, you know, the people you get to talk to at work, you know, human interactions with strangers. These are the things that you realise how much you miss at a time like this.
Absolutely. And I've been back on following and kind of engaging with our Russell Brand. You know, I love him. And a lot of the work that's been in my head, because this first week, I haven't really done much work for myself. I've been getting the kids sorted and getting a bit settled. But I know I've got to get back my brain engaged in the work that I love. So obviously mental health and coaching and looking at kind of really that bigger picture of how our mind and our thoughts work. And the one thing, it's a bloody leveller. Who we are as humans, because no matter who you are, where you're from, what you look like, how much money you've got, we've all got this one common ground. When we come back out of this, I think, like you said, stripping back as to who we are, like the essence of us as humans, really, without getting too deep about it, but it's a real level.
I think that is true. It's bringing to focus, you know, you see all these celebrities on Instagram and they're, you know, complaining about being bored in their house with all these spare rooms. And you think, what I wouldn't give for a spare room to be bored in right now.
Yeah.
On the more sort of day-to-day logistics side, it is an equaliser.
Because no matter what you've got, you still can't do anything. You're still bound by the rules of what's going on from your government. One of the things about that is you become accustomed to your own environment. So although those people that maybe very well off and that live in a really privileged environment, to them, they're accustomed to that. That's nothing new to them if that's how they've always lived. So they're going to have the same boredom, the same thinking about what they're going to cook, the same thinking about I need to somehow exercise, the same thing about looking after their children, you know, all the kind of day-to-day stuff that's still there for everybody when you strip things back. I just hope that those kind of things get into people's heads a bit and we can start being a bit kinder as a nation and looking after people and treating everybody with respect as equals, you know. I do reckon it's going to have some impact on a lot of people in that way.
I think so. I certainly hope so. It brings a united focus that has been, I think, sorely lacking in this country. And it's an interesting one hearing the news so often right now being compared to wartime, particularly around a lot of the restrictions that haven't been in place like this since the Second World War. And, you know, I'm wary of it because there are huge, huge differences, but there are kind of nuanced similarities, and particularly around how each of us can have possibility to thrive in these adverse circumstances. You know, the most resilient among us, or the ones with really good family networks, can really thrive right now. But equally, there's a lot of people that don't have that, that are being recognised and given better support. You know, right now there's all these initiatives to make the elderly feel less isolated. And a lot of these people were isolated anyway. So some of these solutions are for a pre-existing issue. And certainly when I talk to older people myself, and I have done in the past, a lot of them miss elements of wartime, specific parts of it that brought people together, like the fact that as a country, you all felt like you were in it together. you were all striving for something, you were all trying to do your bit and be a part of the solution. And in the same way, some of the measures, some of the restrictions around your life also gave rise to more creativity, you know, more people making their own clothes, more people going into industries they wouldn't have maybe been allowed to, been qualified for, or even wanted to. Suddenly, in face of a huge challenge, people found a way to survive and to thrive. And so as difficult as things are right now, I am seeing elements of that. And mental health is being recognized as a big factor in this. It's often not recognized enough, as we usually discuss. But even just today, one of the lead stories with the BBC News this morning was around the mental health impact. They interviewed two experts on it. And they've also launched a new show called Health Check UK Live, where they're really trying to put in place a lot of content to support people's mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually quite proud of the push of the last year or two, especially from more podcasts like ours, much more campaigning and awareness around mental health, because I think that has had a massive impact on actually the amount of work that's gone into what's happening now. Because if this virus had hit us 5 years ago, I don't think there'd be half as much people talking about mental health so freely and openly as they are today. And yeah, we've still got a long way to go, but more awareness than there would have been a few years ago. So I'm really pleased for that.
Yeah, I think that's so true. So we'll wrap up then on that hopefully more positive note. And yeah, as we keep saying, this is a great time to look out for each other. This is a great time to get in touch with people that you haven't maybe seen or spoken to for a long time. You've got no excuse. Everyone is just as far away right now when they're on the end of a phone. Any last message you want to give, Danielle?
No, only that Bobby's right, you've got no excuse, but remember, if you want one, you can have one. Like, again, even though we're now all virtual and we keep advocating like virtual connection, which I think is so important, also cool to stay non-virtual and be a bit isolated if you want. Someone wanted to arrange a call with me the other day, and my first thing was trying to find an excuse because I really wasn't in the frame of mind to have it. And then I thought, I haven't got an excuse. I can't say I'm going to work or I'm busy or I've got this to do. I felt frozen in the moment. So, and I thought, you know what, just own it. And I just said, you know what, I'm feeling really tired. I'm not really in the frame of mind at the moment. So we'll connect in a couple of days. And I just own that and threw it out there. And the person was like, absolutely fine, no problem. So, you know, feel free to paraphrase that when you're communicating with people. But yeah, be who you need to be and just own whatever space you need to own, whether that's virtual or not.
That's great. I love that approach. I also love the fact that we really run the gamut. Socialize or don't.
Yeah.
All of it is valid.
Yeah.
Grand. All right, we'll wrap up there then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.